Welcome to Behind the Latch, inspiration and evidence for lactation professionals. Whether you're a new lactation consultant, a seasoned professional, continued learning is essential for staying up to date and providing evidence. I'll bring you expert interviews, research recaps, and case studies to help you refine your skills and elevate your practice. No matter where you are in your IBCLC journey, this podcast is for you. Welcome to Behind the Latch. I'm Margaret Salty, your host, and this is the Research Recap, where I review some of the articles that show up in my inbox from Google Scholar Alerts. The first paper I want to talk about today is titled Infant and Young Child Feeding Practices and Their Association with Women's Autonomy, a community-based study in rural West Bengal. This was a cross-sectional descriptive study involving 161 mothers of children aged 6 to 23 months conducted in West Bengal. Data were collected using structured interviews in the infant and young child feeding practices and validated 18-item Likert scale tool assessing maternal autonomy across three domains: decision-making, freedom of movement, and financial control. So what did the researchers find? First, 96.3% of children had been breastfed, a promising number, except 37.3% did not start breastfeeding within 1 hour of birth, missing the critical golden hour window. 18% received pre-lacteal feeds, and 24.2% were not exclusively breastfed. That means 93.2% continued breastfeeding beyond 1 year, a clear strength in this community. More than half of the children, 54%, had inadequate dietary diversity, and 60.2% lacked a minimum acceptable diet, even if meal frequency was generally adequate. More than half of the mothers, 54.7%, had low autonomy, meaning they required permission to leave the home, spend money, or make decisions about their child's care. What were the key associations? First, female children were less likely to receive good infant and young child feeding practices than males. Mothers who delivered via cesarean were significantly less likely to iterate or continue optimal infant and young child feeding practices. Mothers with higher autonomy scores had better infant and young child feeding practices. The study found a moderately positive correlation. This suggests that empowerment, both in mobility and household decision-making, is critical to successful infant feeding. So why does this matter for us as lactation consultants? First, feeding equity starts with maternal empowerment. We must go beyond teaching, latching, and positioning. We need to listen to what limits a mother's ability to make choices, whether it's pressure to formula feed, traditional food taboos, or family control over health decisions. Next, low autonomy can hide behind high breastfeeding rates. Even when we see high rates of continued breastfeeding, exclusive breastfeeding and dietary diversity may still be lacking, especially for girls or in cesarean births. And third, cesarean recovery needs tailored lactation support. Mothers who deliver by cesarean face more barriers, physical, emotional, and sometimes structural. They need more proactive outreach from lactation professionals to sustain breastfeeding initiation and duration. This study is a powerful reminder that breastfeeding success isn't just about milk. It's about agency, equity, and support. If we want to improve feeding practices, we have to champion the rights and voices of mothers, not just in West Bengal, but everywhere. The next paper I want to talk about today is titled Knowledge, Attitude, and Practice of Breastfeeding Mothers Attending King Abdulaziz University Hospital, Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. This paper looks at how knowledge, attitudes, and practices interact to shape breastfeeding outcomes. This study is particularly relevant for IBCLC's working with diverse populations and in hospital-based or public health settings. The researchers conducted a cross-sectional survey with qualitative interviews involving 334 mothers who gave birth in the last 5 years and attended King Abdulaziz University Hospital's family medicine and pediatric outpatient clinics. They explored three main dimensions. First, knowledge and attitudes about breastfeeding benefits and practices, attitudes toward breastfeeding, including cultural beliefs and personal values, and actual breastfeeding behaviors, including exclusivity, initiation, and barriers. So what did the researchers find? First, breastfeeding initiation was high, but exclusivity was low. 88% of mothers initiated breastfeeding, but only 39% practice exclusive breastfeeding for 6 months. The median exclusive breastfeeding duration was 4 months. Next, working mothers were more knowledgeable. Working mothers were significantly more likely to know about colostrum benefits, understand exclusive breastfeeding guidelines, and feed 8 or more times daily. But non-working mothers were more likely to believe that breast milk and formula were equivalent, and many cited lack of knowledge about breast milk sufficiency. Next, early initiation and frequent feeding were stronger in working mothers. Working mothers were more likely to start breastfeeding within the first hour, but paradoxically, non-working mothers were more likely to have breastfed their previous children for longer durations. Next, formula use was common. 71% of babies received ready-made liquid formula in the hospital. Only 27% of mothers breastfed for a full 2 years as recommended. And finally, attitudes were not strongly linked to work status. Both groups showed moderate to high intention to breastfeed. However, structural barriers like lack of private breastfeeding spaces and short maternity leave significantly impacted behavior, especially for working mothers. The qualitative interviews shed light on real-world barriers and facilitators. Here are the key themes that emerged. First, supportive factors, which involved knowledge from workshops or health professionals, positive experiences with previous children, from husbands and family, baby's preference for breast milk, and the use of tools like pillows, suction machines, and maternity leave. The other theme was barriers. There were no private spaces in public hospital or workplace settings. There was emotional stress, nipple pain, and perceived low milk supply, cultural beliefs that expressed milk is useless, and long working hours and unsupportive work environments. So why does this matter for us as lactation consultants? This study is a vivid reminder that knowledge alone isn't enough. Attitudes and intentions must be supported by system-level changes, especially in hospitals, workplaces, and communities. As IBCLCs, we must ensure counseling practices include practical troubleshooting for common barriers. We should partner with employers and policymakers to advocate for breastfeeding-friendly spaces. We should reframe misconceptions about expressed milk, low milk supply, and formula equivalency. And we should create tailored messages for both working and non-working mothers addressing their specific challenges. Knowledge, attitudes, and practices form a triad, but without supportive environments, even the most informed and motivated parents may struggle. This study challenges us to think bigger about the policies, spaces, and support networks we need to truly enable breastfeeding success. The next paper I want to talk about today is titled Breastfeeding Mothers Concerned About Breast Milk Supply, Logistics of Breastfeeding, and Child Development Outcomes. This research looked at real-time concerns shared in a Facebook support group in Singapore, offering an unfiltered view of what matters most to lactating parents. This qualitative study used content analysis to explore 500 posts from a private breastfeeding support group. The researchers used an open-ended inductive approach, meaning they let the themes emerge naturally from the data rather than predefining categories. It's a rare and valuable look at what mothers talk about when no one is directing the conversation. The posts came from mothers in Singapore in November of 2023. These mothers had access to baby-friendly hospitals and lactation-trained providers, but exclusive breastfeeding rates in Singapore remain low, less than 10% at 6 months. So despite resources, challenges persist, and many mothers are turning to social media for help. So what did the researchers find? They identified 12 core themes in mothers' posts. The top three concerns were managing breast milk supply. Most posts were about low supply, with others about oversupply and lopsided supply. Many mothers were unsure if their baby was getting enough milk, whether crying, cluster feeding, or not gaining weight. The logistics of breastfeeding. Challenges included pumping while traveling, storing milk safely, managing feeds while returning to work, and public breastfeeding. And concerns about baby's growth. Mothers worried about milk volume, diaper output, weight gain, and if their milk was good enough. Other common themes included latch difficulties, pumping struggles, maternal health concerns like pain, plugged ducts, and body image, and making breastfeeding more manageable, especially at night. medication, lactating, and bottle refusal, weaning, tandem nursing, and behavioral norms. Interestingly, while we often talk about social support as a key factor, mothers on this platform mostly sought practical advice, not emotional validation. This suggests that online peer groups may act more as knowledgeable hubs than as sources of support in the traditional sense. So why does this matter for us as lactation consultants? This study is a treasure trove of insight for anyone supporting breastfeeding families. First, breastfeeding self-efficacy is fragile. Concerns about supply, latching, or managing feeds were emotionally charged and deeply tied to mother's confidence. Next, practical barriers like returning to work, storing milk, and dealing with bottle refusal were major stressors. Many questions centered around what's normal, from diaper output to night wakings to changes in breast appearance, showing us how much reassurance matters. And finally, social media is a critical platform for outreach, especially in digital-first cultures like Singapore. IBCLCs can leverage these platforms to provide accurate, compassionate, and timely information. This study is a powerful reminder that the breastfeeding journey is not just a private one. It's an increasingly social one, shaped by what mothers read, ask, and share online. If we want to support families effectively, we need to show up where they're already asking questions. The final paper I want to talk about today is titled Chrononutrition and the Role of Melatonin in Neonates. This is a fascinating narrative review that explains how breast milk is not just nutrition, it's a time-sensitive biological, it's time-sensitive biological messaging. Through the lens of chrononutrition, this paper walks us through how melatonin transferred through breast milk plays a critical role in synchronizing the infant's circadian rhythms, supporting sleep, and shaping long-term immune and neurological health. This is a narrative review that synthesizes current research across physiology, neonatology, and chronobiology. The article draws from animal and human studies, and although it doesn't include new clinical data, it makes a powerful case for considering time-of-day feeding as a clinical variable in lactation care. What this paper tells us about breast milk and melatonin. First, melatonin is a that regulates sleep, immune function, and even gut health. Next, newborns, especially preterm infants, cannot produce their own melatonin. Instead, they rely entirely on maternal melatonin, both prenatally and postnatally through breast milk. Next, melatonin levels in breast milk follow a daily rhythm, peaking at night and disappearing in the day. This rhythmic delivery helps entrain the body's biological clock. Next, breastfed babies develop more stable circadian rhythms and better sleep patterns than formula-fed infants. One cited study showed breastfed infants had a rest activity rhythm by 6 weeks compared to 12 weeks in formula-fed babies. And finally, breast milk melatonin may also support the gut-brain axis, influencing intestinal barrier function, reducing colic, and shaping neurodevelopment through microbiome interactions. There were also some special considerations for preterm infants. Preterm babies are especially dependent on exogenous melatonin because their own circadian systems are immature. This review emphasizes the importance of breast milk, especially night express milk for preterm infants. The risks of NICU environments with continuous lighting and no day-night cycles, and the need to consider circadian care practices like cycled lighting and time-matched milk administration. So why does this matter for us as lactation consultants? This review gives us new dimension to our advocacy for human milk. We're not just promoting breastfeeding, we're promoting a biologically timed delivery system. It reinforces the importance of encouraging parents to label express milk with the time of day, especially when infants are in the NICU or bottle fed. And it provides scientific rationale for supporting the use of fresh or time-matched donor milk where possible, especially for preterm babies. And it adds new language to our conversations, chrononutrition, melatonin signaling, and the gut-brain immune connection, all of which could be future research and advocacy priorities for the lactation field. One note on pasteurization. The review notes that holder pasteurization may reduce melatonin content in donor milk, although the findings are mixed. This raises questions about how milk banks might better preserve chronobiotic components in the future. This review reminds us that breast milk is more than food. It's a living, dynamic, rhythmic signal that programs an infant's biology. As IBCLCs, we have the opportunity to translate this science into practice, advocating not just for breastfeeding, but for breastfeeding in time. Thanks so much for joining me on this episode of the Research Recap. Be sure to like, follow, and subscribe so I'll keep showing up in your feed. And tune in next week for more literature reviews. Bye, everybody.
Be sure to like, follow, and subscribe. And check me out on social media at Margaret Salty.